This episode of Check the Locks is brought to you by our friends at Audible.
Audible is your one-stop shop for audio entertainment where you can always find the best of what you love or discover something new.
That's right. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from mysteries, thrillers, biographies, and of course, true crime.
And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month from their catalog to keep forever, including the latest bestsellers and new releases.
Audible members also get access to thousands of podcasts from popular favorites, exclusive new series, and this very podcast you're listening to now.
Plus, the Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking the dog, doing chores, Audible makes listening anywhere easy.
And best of all, Check the Locks listeners can try Audible for free for 30 days. So head over to audibletrial.com/checkthelocks or click the link in the show notes to start enjoying Audible today.
Warning, Check the Locks podcast is a true crime podcast and may contain graphic descriptions of violence, murder, sexual assault, and more. Check the Locks podcast is not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
Welcome back to Check the Locks podcast. As always, I'm John Connor.
I'm Olivia Cornu.
Saying thank you for joining us this week as we dive into yet another truly terrifying true crime case. Before we get started, as always, Olivia, it's wonderful to see you. How are you? You just stepped off a plane. We're recording late because you just got back from New York, but how was your trip? How did everything go?
Oh, New York was amazing. I think I need to live there, maybe. I feel like I need to go there one more time to really decide that, but I really enjoyed the subway. And I've always said that, you know, I don't like driving. So living somewhere with public transportation is just like right up my alley. But it was a very successful trip. My nephew, we're going to give him a little shout out. He is ranked number 3 in the nation for the freshman mile at the indoor track. So we had a successful race. The team raced very well. The other individual that raced did very well. We had a lot of PRs and some, you know, school records. And just the fact of being at the Nike Indoor Nationals in New York City was just awesome in itself. So we had a great time. Had some mom and sister time.
That is awesome. I'm glad that he did so well. Shout out, nephew. Good job getting that number 3 spot. I mean, I imagine it's very competitive. There's a lot of people there participating and stuff like that. So it's got to be a huge deal. And I'm sure the family is super, super proud.
Oh, yeah, always. I mean, the kid just continues to amaze me and impress me with his dedication and just like athleticism. So, but it is a late night. How was your weekend? You went to your concert.
Yes, we went and saw Wolves of Glendale and it was awesome. It was so much fun. It's one of those things where like, if you find them and that's kind of your thing, you're really into it. And like the people who go, it's all like you're in on the same, like why you think it's funny. So everybody's kind of like-minded. So it was a very communal experience. Everybody was smiling. Nobody was in a bad mood. Everybody was really excited. And it made me feel like a kid again because the place that we went in Nashville is called The Basement. And it is literally like an old house. And then they've turned the basement of it into a venue. So you can like reach up and touch the ceiling. Like it's not very big and you're face to face. The stage is on the ground. So it's a small club, but like Metallica has played there. Cage the Elephant has played there. There's all this history. Yeah. And so to be there and be face to face and then thinking about growing up and being in bands and touring and all the kind of places we played, it kind of was this weird thing where it's like, oh, I feel like I'm home in a weird way, just in this like tiny little room with all these people who are just there to get down on the same kind of thing. So it was really cool, really funny. Again, if you like silly stuff, I definitely recommend you check out Wolves of Glendale because they're a lot of fun to listen to. But it was a good time. We had fun, a kid-free night, which was nice. You know, she stayed at grandma's house. So shout out to the Mimi for taking the kid and letting us have some adult time. But it was a lot of fun. And they're coming back in November. And we were already talking like we're going to buy tickets. I don't care if it's the exact same show that we just saw. We're going to go back and see them again. So
I know. I feel like I need to come up there and go so I can hear them sing a song about me.
You should. They have a song called Olivia that is about your roommate being a ghost, and the ghost is, it's really funny. Just if you're interested or want to check it out, again, it's Wolves of Glendale, but I geeked out. I got Kara a t-shirt, got two posters. So I was excited. I got to find some place to hang them up, but really geeked out there for a little bit. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Sounds like a good weekend.
Well, I'm glad you're back. I'm glad we're getting to dive into this case. I got to tell you, this one's a little bit longer. We're covering a lot of time span. I mean, I think some of the events in this, we go back to 1925 for certain parts of this case. So we cover a big time span, a lot of historical stuff. So I'm really excited to get into it with you because I wasn't familiar with this until I went through. And then I was like, oh, I do know this case. And I'm wondering if you may have the same experience when we get through it, because it is tied to something that's actually come out pretty recently. I'm wondering if our listeners will pick up what it is, or, you know, maybe if they pick up on the familiarity of it as we go through. So I don't know. Should we just jump into it? Because I was really excited to cover it with you.
Yeah, let's get started.
All right, let's do it. This week, we are headed to New Jersey. Now, from the outside, John List and his family seem to have it all. They lived in a large mansion in Westfield where John worked at a prestigious bank. But in 1971, a neighbor noticed that all of the lights in the home were on for several days, and what would be found would be truly devastating. But to understand how such a tragedy can occur, we have to take a closer look at John List. He was born in Bay City, Michigan in 1925 to his mother Alma and father John Frederick. Now, at 64, John's father was nearly 25 years older than his wife. The family was of German descent and were avid churchgoers, and because of this, the household was strict. They lived in a large Victorian-style home, of which they rented out the top floor. John List lived in the parlor and had virtually no privacy. As a boy, he was expected to be neat, excel at school, and uphold the faith of their church. He would rarely spend time with his father, who referred to him only as the boy. But his mother, Alma, was quite the opposite. She feared that her son would get sick, so he wasn't allowed to play outside with other children. Instead, Liss would go to church social events with her. He would eventually complete high school and would enlist in the army, with some believing it was a way to escape his overprotective mother. A year after enlisting in 1944, John Frederick passed away. List returned home for the funeral, but seemed to share no signs of grief for the loss. This may have been due to the cold nature of the pair's relationship. Shortly after, John would be shipped overseas. However, the war would end before he saw any type of combat, but he did come home with a new interest, firearms, especially the Austrian Steyr pistol he had brought with him. Now stateside and needing direction, John enrolled at the University of Michigan to study accounting. He would graduate with a degree in business finance and eventually get his MBA. Additionally, he was a second lieutenant in the Army Reserves. But after college and shortly after starting a new job, he was called back into service, this time for the Korean War. However, he was stationed in Virginia and would again see no combat. But while there, he did meet Helen Taylor at a bowling alley. Helen was a 24-year-old military widow who was raising a 9-year-old daughter named Brenda. John was immediately smitten with her, and the pair began dating, much to his mother's disliking. You see, Helen didn't belong to the church, which meant that she was an outsider. But shortly after the pair had met, Helen announced that she was pregnant, and the couple was married in December of 1951. Again, Alma was upset, telling her son that he had married someone beneath him. And when it turned out that Helen had lied about being pregnant, Alma's feelings continued to grow. The two women couldn't stand each other, and John was always in the middle. By 1955, List had been discharged, and the family was living in Detroit. John and Helen's firstborn, Patricia Marie, had arrived, and List was back to working at a prestigious accounting firm. However, he was offered a better position in Kalamazoo, and the family would relocate. And it was while living there that the couple's second child, John Frederick, was born. Now, as time passed, Helen became less and less interested in John's religion, and she would stop attending church with him. This caused tension in the home because John was feeling abandoned. Additionally, Helen's daughter Brenda was now 16. She was acting out and wanting to escape the family home. However, John and Helen would have their third child, Frederick Michael, in 1958. And after, Helen began drinking a lot. She also had a fondness for taking tranquilizers recreationally. Helen began spending more money than the couple earned and distancing herself from the children. This left John feeling isolated and doing most of the child rearing alone. And it didn't help when his company merged with another one and he was fired. He then took a position with Xerox in Rochester, New York, and the family relocated again, but things still didn't get any better. Helen's spending continued, and they lied about their situation to friends. John would eventually be let go from Xerox and was again on the hunt for work. Eventually, he was offered a job as vice president and comptroller for First National Bank in Jersey City, New Jersey. John accepted, but to make the move to the city of Westfield, he needed help. He called his mother and asked for money to put down on a property called Breeze Knoll, a large Victorian mansion on Hillside Avenue. Alma agreed to help her son, but she had one condition. She would move in with the family in their new home. Needing the money, John agreed and Alma moved in. Now, John's new job involved selling and bringing in new business, and being socially awkward, this wasn't his strong suit. Because of this, he was let go from this new position only a year after starting it. But John couldn't bring himself to tell Helen. You see, it turns out that his wife had gotten syphilis from her first husband, and the drinking and pills made her condition accelerate. She would be diagnosed with cerebral atrophy, and doctors recommend that John commit her, but he refused. His wife's condition, as well as a high mortgage, were weighing on him, and rather than tell anyone what was going on, he continued to leave the home every morning, telling his family that he was off to work. Instead, he would spend 8 hours a day sitting at the train station reading a book or the newspaper. To get by, he used money from his mother's account to cover the mortgage. Liz would eventually find another job, but it paid significantly less, and to cover bills, he would take out a second mortgage on the home. At this point, John felt that everything was falling apart. He had no control over his life and began being stern with his children. His older daughter, Patricia, began rebelling. Now, like many other kids in the 60s, she began taking drugs and she developed an interest in the occult. Because of this, they had frequent arguments. To avoid the family, John threw himself into hobbies, war history, crime stories, and weapons. And by the end of the decade, John List had begun making some strange comments, including mentioning to his brother-in-law that it would be easy to start, quote, a new life.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So, Olivia, before we go any further, what are you thinking? Where's your brain at so far?
Well, my first thought is that why would you name your son John Frederick when you didn't really like your father named John Frederick? Like, I feel like it's an honor to name your child after your father. Maybe it was just the timing and the eras in which they were at, but to name their kid after a man that he didn't really care for, that kind of didn't settle well with me. But I'm not really sure where this is going to go. What's kind of coming to my mind right now is he's thinking about starting a family with that last comment that we just heard about, like, he's probably going to off his family and start from scratch. But it's got to be more twisted than that, I think.
Well, as I was going through the research, and I don't know if you feel the same way, it felt like something is boiling. You know what I mean? Like, there's a tension or pressure inside the house. And As I was going through, I was like, man, it feels like something is about to explode. And that's kind of the sense that I had gotten up to this point. I do agree with your naming your kid after your father. I don't know. In the research, I don't know if it's so much that, like, he didn't like him or if it was just because he was so old, because he was 64 when he was born.
He wasn't really parenting.
Right. And a lot of the research basically said that, you know, he only communicated with his son through Alma, the mother. You know, so it was like, he's the boy, you know what I mean? So I don't know if it's like he didn't care about him or if it was more just like you said, the times, right? Like, I'm old, I'm hands off, like, you know what you got to do, be respectful. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it did feel weird.
Yeah, I don't really know where this is going to go, if I'm being honest.
But nothing sounded familiar yet. I'm wondering if anything sounded familiar to the listeners yet, but anything sticking out to you?
No, nothing to me. Nothing yet.
All right. Well, should we keep going?
Yeah, let's keep going.
All right, let's do it. On the morning of November 5th, 1971, John List called his children into the dining room table. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, he told them that they needed to be prepared to die. List then asked his children if they preferred to be buried or cremated. Now, the children were obviously shocked, but eventually they were able to tell their father that they would prefer to be buried. And without another word, John List turned and walked out of the room. Only a few days later, on November 9th, List would gather Patricia, Michael, and John to take them to school. When he arrived back at the home, List retrieved two handguns from his vehicle and walked inside, one of which was the Austrian Stare he had brought home from his time in the military. It was there that he found Helen in the kitchen. She sat sipping her morning coffee. John raised his gun and shot his wife in the back of the head, killing her instantly. List then proceeded up the stairs to find his mother, Alma. She too was shot and killed as she lay in her bed. Then List simply waited. And when Patricia and Michael returned home from school, they met the same sad fate, with their father shooting and killing them both. List then made a sandwich before he got in the car. He would visit the post office and then attend his son John's soccer game. When the match was over, the pair climbed into the family car, with John having no idea the terrible fate about to fall upon him. Once they arrived home and walked inside, List shot John in the chest and killed him. With his entire family murdered, List dragged the bodies in the living room, laying them all on sleeping bags. Then he walked through the mansion with a pair of scissors, removing his face from every single photo. Before leaving the home, List wrote a note to his pastor. He claimed that the family had begun to turn away from God, and the only way to secure their place into heaven was to kill them. List proceeded to cancel all deliveries to the home. He also called the children's school, claiming that they would be on vacation for several weeks. List would sleep in the home with the bodies of his family until the next morning. Finally, he turned on all the lights along with the radio and walked out of the front door. And with that, John Emil List vanished. Now, a month later, a neighbor noticed that all of the lights in the home had been on consistently, and they found it very odd and decided to contact the authorities. When the police arrived on December 9, 1971, they immediately noticed the organ music playing in the home, and as they worked their way through the house, they made the brutal discovery. Authorities located the bodies as well as the 5-page letter that List had left, but there was no sign of the family's patriarch. Now, at this point, the FBI was brought into the investigation, and List's car would be found at the John F. Kennedy International Airport in New York, but there was still no sign of their killer. And with that, the trail went cold. However, New Jersey prosecutors refused to give up on finding John List, and they continued to work the case for years. In fact, 18 years later, in 1989, they came up with a plan. They contacted the producers of a popular television show and shared the story of the List family. This show was called America's Most Wanted. Now, producers were interested, but they needed an updated photo of List to use on the show. Unfortunately, no such photo existed, but there was another option, and a call was made to Frank Bender. Now, Bender was an expert forensic artist. After hearing the story, he agreed to do a bust of what List may have looked like at his current age. Bender gave the bust a hawk nose, grizzled eyebrows, and horn-rimmed glasses. This is because psychologists believe that List would still wear the same type of glasses that he had as a young man, simply because this would remind him of the days when he was considered successful. And with the bust made, the episode aired on May 21st, 1989, the very first year that America's Most Wanted was on the air. Tips immediately began pouring in, and one seemed to stand out. A woman in Virginia thought the rendition looked an awful lot like her neighbor, a man named Robert Clark. According to the woman, her neighbor was also an accountant who was very involved with the church. So obviously, authorities arrived at Clark's home and spoke with his wife. The couple had met at a church event in 1977 and married in 1985, and what she told police would solve a cold case over a decade old. After the murder, it seems that List had traveled to Colorado. He took the alias Richard Clark after a classmate from the University of Michigan. The assumed identity worked, and he continued to use it when he moved to Richmond, Virginia. With this information, John List was finally arrested on June 1st, 1989, just 10 days after the episode of America's Most Wanted aired. Now, his trial would begin in 1990, and his attorneys would argue that he suffered PTSD from his time in World War II and the Korean War. But remember, List saw no combat. Another expert would suggest that List was going through an extreme midlife crisis, but the prosecution argued that such a crisis was no excuse for murdering his entire family. Ultimately, the jury would side with the prosecution. He was found guilty and sentenced to 5 consecutive life sentences. In 2002, List gave an interview with Connie Chung. In it, he claimed that he didn't commit suicide because he believed it would keep him from entering heaven. He claimed that all he wanted was to be reunited with his family in the afterlife. Now, John Emil List died while in prison from complications of pneumonia in 2008, and he was 82 years old. So that's this week's case, Olivia. Where's your head at? What are you thinking?
This one is a doozy, John. First thing, I learned a fun fact. Did not know that America's Most Wanted started the year that I was born. So yes, now y'all can do the math. I was born in 1989. So that was pretty cool. But I also don't understand how people can just be somebody else for so many years. And like, you don't have to have your social security card. Like, I don't understand like how people just are someone else. And kudos to the forensic artist who, you know, helped America's Most Wanted and the neighbor who was actually watching to report him. Just the coincidence that she's like, yeah, I mean, he's really involved in the church. He's an accountant. So it's like, check the box, check the box. Like, it sounds like it's him. But I also think it's interesting that he's willing to kill his entire family. But yet if he were to commit suicide, he wouldn't go to heaven. And as someone who, you know, goes to church and grew up in the church, like, no sin is greater than the other. So it's like, if you're going to kill your whole family, I don't know. But like, did he end up having kids with this other woman or?
Not that I saw in the research, but what I do wonder, because again, I grew up in Southern Baptist Church. So you're right. I do believe according to, you know, what's preached and stuff like that, there is no sin greater than another sin, but you have to be able to ask forgiveness for your sins. And I think that's the catch where it's, if you complete suicide, you don't have the opportunity to repent for what you did. And so it's like the thing that it's ultimately like the worst one, because there's nothing you can do to be like, forgive me, I'm sorry I did that, you know?
Right. But I don't get how someone who was so dependent on his religion and his church and how he could have lived okay for, I don't remember the math, but at least a decade or more. Knowing that he killed so many of his family members, his children, his wife, his mother, I don't know. I mean, like, he didn't have combat issues, so there's got to be no real PTSD from there, like they were trying to claim. But this almost makes me feel like he was just a straight sociopath.
Yeah, for me, I think that there was a lot of mounting financial pressure. You know, he had married this woman who ended up having syphilis and her brain tissue was like shrinking and rotting away.
Yeah, neurosyphilis is no joke.
Yeah. And then he's got, you know, his oldest daughter is doing drugs because it's the 60s and like everybody's doing drugs and he's super religious and she's messing with the occult. To me, it seems like he had some mental illness from the way that he grew up and was feeling overwhelmed. And was like in a hole that he couldn't get out of. And so I think exactly what he told his brother-in-law. I can start a new life. I can, mm-hmm. I can kill these people and I can run off and I can start brand new. And I'm going to use my religious views to offer some kind of explanation for what I did. I think it's a cop out and an excuse.
Well, if John thought it was hard in the '80s, he sure didn't want to live in 2024. That's for dang sure.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, what are you doing? Having a hard time making it as it is. And so you're like, I'm going to buy a mansion in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to go to my mom and ask my mom for money. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it feels like a keeping up with the Joneses, right? Like,
oh yeah, for sure. See, and now I have a house and I'm like, I just need a tiny home. I don't need half the space that I have.
I know we had a winter storm and it knocked piece of the siding off, like underneath the gutter. So you can see like the insulation. And I'm waiting for somebody to come look at it and give me a quote. But I'm like, why did I buy a house? Why did mm-hmm. I do this? Just let me get a little tiny house on a little, you know, got the loft bed, you know, you just climb up.
All I night. Need, a little Murphy bed, just pull it out. Yeah. You don't even need a whole bed. But anyways, let's not get down that rabbit hole. But this was a good episode. This was a good one. And I like how Connie Chung came back. I saw that and I was like, oh, Connie Chung, I remember her.
Oh, yeah. Maury Povich's wife mm-hmm. on The Maury Show. But yeah, this one was just hard because I feel like you can look at it a lot of different angles. You know what I mean? Because like everybody who listens to this show is somebody's child, right? A lot of people that listen to this podcast are married. You're a husband, you're a wife, you're a sister, you know what I mean? A brother, something like that. And with this being an entire family, it's hard not to find some way to relate, you know, to the victims, which is, I just don't know. I don't know if it's because of her substance abuse problem. Like I said, if you just felt, well, I don't understand the kids, that the kids didn't do anything but be born to you. Yeah. That's the only thing they're guilty of is being your kid, you know? But if we're talking deadbolt test, where does something like this fall on your deadbolt test for you?
If we're talking deadbolt test, I think this one, I'm going to put about a 7. I think because it's just been so long ago that it's a sad story, but a very interesting one. Like I said, I just think it comes down to this man, just something wasn't right. You know, nothing is so bad in life that you kill your entire family and just start over and pretend to be somebody else. But I'm just glad that ultimately, you know, he had to pay for what he did. And, you know, hopefully the other family members, you know, got some sort of resolution from this, knowing that they know who killed their entire family. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think for me, it's going to be an 8 because there's something again about this where it's like, you know, everyone is a kid. You know what I mean? Everybody is, you have some relation to the people in your life. And with this being an entire family, you know what I mean? And just thinking about like how someone could be so stressed out that they're like, this is the only option that I have. You know what I mean? Like I want out so bad. This is the only thing that I can do. I also think it's really interesting to kind of think about how this story would play out now, because like, there's no way you could be off the grid for that long. You know what I mean? You'd be on Ring doorbell cameras. You'd be on security footage. Like everybody would know exactly where you're going.
No way.
So, you know, I like these cases where it's like, this is only possible because of the fact that it happened when it did. And if it happened now, you know, people would know where you were in a heartbeat, you know, but I did want to ask you as well, because I know that we had kind of talked about in the beginning, and this might sound familiar. Have you ever watched The Watcher on Netflix about the family that like moves into the house and they're getting the random letters? It's supposed to be based on a true story, but getting letters that are like, I'm watching the house and like scaring them, mm-mm. stuff like that.
No, do I need to?
I've only seen bits and pieces. It has Bobby Cannavale in it, who I like love. I think he's awesome. Jennifer Coolidge is in it. Kara was watching it. I caught bits and pieces, but it looked really good. But one of the parts that I saw, they tell this story as if this person had lived in this home in the show before. And they change his name to, I believe it's John Graff in the Netflix show. But they go through and like do a quick reenactment, or they tell the story about it. And I was going through the research and I was like, did I do this case before? Like I literally had to Google, because we've done so many. This is our 92nd episode. So I had to Google. I was like, did I like cover this? Am I wasting a bunch of time doing a story I've already done? And then I saw it. And I was like, oh, like that's why, because I saw it in the Netflix show. So if you've watched it, definitely let us know in the Facebook group. Let us know if the real story kind of matches up to what you thought from the one in the show. But I just thought it was interesting because it was just sparking these things in my brain. I was like, I know that I know this and I have no idea how I do. So I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I feel like I need to go back and watch that show then, because I do like Jennifer Coolidge. She's like the only celebrity I ever see in New Orleans. See her all the time here. I've seen her at least 5 times. Opened the door for her a few months ago.
Oh,
at a restaurant. I was like, oh, that's Jennifer Coolidge. Hey,
thank you for opening the door for me. I can't do Jennifer Coolidge, but she'll always be Stifler's mom to me from
always.
American Pie.
Every time I see her, that's all I can think of. But anyways, this was a good episode. I'm gonna have to go watch The Watcher and see, but I want to hear what the Facebook group has to say about it to see if, you know, they're familiar with it.
Yeah, me too. And speaking of the Facebook group, you know, that is where we fall on the deadbolt test for this week's episode. Olivia's putting it at 7. I'm putting it at an 8. But as always, we want to hear from you, the listeners, the locksmiths. Where does the List Family Murders fall on your deadbolt test? You can let us know. Reach out to us on Instagram at Check the Locks Pod. Find us on Twitter at Check the Locks. And if you're not in our Facebook group, what are you doing? Scoot your boot on over. Come hang out with us. We'd love to get to know you, learn a little bit more about you. Olivia, I have to say, again, going through this research, I was just like, man, this is heavy, right? Again, you know, whole family being murdered. It's just a lot. So I'm definitely in the mood for something a little happier. I'm glad that you're back, because I got to ask you, do we have a 5-star review to read this week?
We actually do have a 5-star review, but I will say we're running low.
We need more. We do.
But this week's 5-star review comes from Maze 5377. And they said, I've been a listener from the start, and Check the Locks was an immediate ad for me. Thanks for keeping things interesting. So thank you, Maze 5377, for leaving us a 5-star review. We really appreciate it.
Yes, Maze, thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. We talk about it every week, but these reviews, they help us so much. They get us into other shows' recommendations. They help new listeners find the show. And really, they just help our community to grow. So the fact that you took the time, sat down, left that review, it really does mean a lot. And we appreciate it so much. We would love to send you some goodies. So again, if you're listening, reach out to us on Instagram, Check the Locks Pod. Find us on Twitter, Check the Locks. If you're in our Facebook group, you can send me a DM as well. Just, you know, hit me up and let me know that you sent it so I don't miss it. But we'd love to get you out. We got some stickers, buttons. We got all sorts of stuff. So just to say thank you for leaving that review, and it really does mean a lot to us. And Olivia, if somebody wants to have their 5-star review read on the podcast, we are low. We need them. What's the best way to do that?
They need to go to the Apple Podcast app, go to our show's homepage, scroll down where you see all 5 of the purple stars, click all 5, and leave us just a little bit of love. You can just say, the podcast is great. It doesn't have to be lengthy.
Yeah, for sure. Anything helps. And again, if you just want to say like, hey, Olivia's charming, John sounds handsome, anything you want to say, we appreciate it. So Olivia always says it best, so I don't have to. That's Apple Podcasts. If you need a link, a cheat code, check out the description of the episode that you're listening to right now. Little link, it'll take you right there. Also, you can leave us comments on Spotify. We would love to read those as well. You know, just again, just want to hear what you're thinking. So if you've taken the time to leave us a review, thank you so much. And if not, what are you doing? Let us know what you think. And as always, if you like what we do, you want to help financially support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/checkthelocks. Get signed up today. We got a lot of great tiers, a lot of exclusive benefits. We got stickers, t-shirts, coffee mugs, all things you can only get from being a patron. Plus, you get the episodes ad-free. So if you love Check the Locks, but you hate commercials, Patreon is the way to go. So again, you like what we do, want to help us keep the lights on, patreon.com/checkthelocks. Get signed up today. Olivia, we have our first international Patreon member. So shout out to Jennifer. I got an alert that somebody had signed up in euros, and I was like, okay. So Jennifer, welcome to the patron. We're super, super happy to have you.
Shout out, Jennifer. Thank you.
And as always, if you can't financially support the show, listen, we definitely understand. Just hanging out with us, listening every week, and sharing what we do with your friends and family means just as much, if not more. So if that is you, you're listening, you're telling people to check out the show, just know that we appreciate it more than we could ever tell you. Again, our goal is just to grow our audience, our community, the people in our little special world here. So if that's you, you're sharing what we do with the people who are important, just know that we appreciate you more than we could ever tell you. That is all that we have for this week's case, but please make sure that you are subscribed to Check the Locks on your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. We will see you again next week with a brand new, truly terrifying true crime case. But until then, don't forget to
check the lock.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye. See you.